What's up, Donation? We have a game on Saturday that is two of my favorite brands in college football. That is the Virginia Tech Hokies coming to Doak Campbell Stadium to take on the Florida State team that we're both struggling this year, man. This is a game that I say that I love. I think I wish there was more to it. There's not a whole lot of people that really care about the game this year because of where our teams are at. But, man, I love these two programs. I love every time they get to meet. I hope we can meet on better terms more often in the future. But we're still going to line it up and play on Saturday. And I still think it's going to be a fun game under the lights in Doak Campbell Stadium, the last home game of the season for us in Tallahassee. Always night games are fun inside Doak Campbell Stadium. And to talk about the Hokies, talking tech, as I'm going to call this one, we have my friend Brian from the Boundary Corner podcast that does a great job covering all things Hokies. So, Brian, really appreciative of you giving us your time to come on the show and talk about the Seminoles versus the Hokies, some big picture questions on Virginia Tech, and a whole lot of other stuff. So, man, I appreciate your time, and how are you, my friend?
Doing great. I wish that our seasons were going in a little bit of a different direction than what they are. But it's always good when you can get FSU, Virginia Tech together on the same field. You don't see it often, but it seems to always be an interesting matchup every time.
Yeah, and at least maybe it's not like one of us is up and one is down. Like, if we're both up, then it's a good game from an up perspective. If it's both down, maybe we just won't know either one is that bad. It'll just be two teams about the same level playing.
That's right.
Who can suck a little bit less, right? That's kind of what we're looking for in this game. But, man, I want to start by just asking you some big picture questions, talking about the series. Because, again, man, these are two teams that when you think of at least on an ACC scale, right, these are two of the most passionate fan bases you have in the conference. These are two of the top stadiums and entrances and things when you think about, you know, the atmosphere of a college game. These are two of the preeminent brands in the ACC with what they have at Lane Stadium and what we have at Doak. So we've met for conference championships. We've met for a national championship. There's a lot of history between these two storied programs. And so the first thing I want to say is we don't play enough, right? We do not play enough. I think the ACC needs to leverage this matchup more often. We've only played four times in the past 15 years, and we've only played in Blacksburg twice since 1989. That is frankly unacceptable, ACC, if you're watching this, Jim Phillips, because I want to go to Lane Stadium, daggone it. It's on my bucket list. I want to see a game at Lane at night. And man, I will say this, like, before we jump into this, I love the Virginia Tech fan base. Like, I love Hokie Nation. We played in 2023, which was one of my first chances to really get, you know, working with you guys. And all the love and support that Virginia Tech fans have shown us during that time, man, this is one of the best fan bases. And, I mean, again, you guys are showing up for a team that we know has had a couple of tough years. So shout out to Hokie Nation, because you guys are probably my absolute favorite fan base to work with. But man, when we talk about Florida State, Virginia Tech, just give me some of your best memories on this series, the history that goes behind it, and maybe a special moment that you have from this series. Obviously, it's going to be from the Hokie side of things, but I just love hearing anybody's experience with the history of a series like this.
Yeah, when I think about this series, I mean, there's been a lot of really, really fun matchups. I mean, obviously, you had the national title matchup, Mike Vick having a hell of a third quarter and then just kind of running out of gas there at the end. And you had Wanky and Peter Warrick having a field day on that field. You know, much to my chagrin, but you know, it was a fun game to watch. It was interesting the whole way. And Mike definitely gave them a run for their money there for a little bit. You know, looking at some of those games that were the conference championships, I mean, you know, Virginia Tech got one in 2010. FSU clipped us back in 05. I mean, there's been, you know, some really important matchups from an ACC standpoint, especially, you know, during Virginia Tech's run in the 2000s when we were, you know, putting out some really good teams there. And I know Florida State had kind of an up and down period in that way. We were kind of riding a little bit of the wave there. The one that sticks out of my memory isn't necessarily the best from a long-term standpoint, but I just remembered it stands out vividly. Back in 2018, we go down to Doak.
I knew it was coming.
The swag surf on the kickoff, yep. And then from there, this what turned out to be a very awful Virginia Tech team beat FSU at home that year. I know FSU didn't turn out to be quite the team that they thought they were going to be either. So that was a very interesting year, but it was a fun game to watch. So there's been a lot of cool matchups in this series.
Yeah, that I was there. I was swag surfing like an idiot. And that was the night we found out, I don't think Willie Taggart's going to work out too well, right? It was really, really fun until we kicked off. And then it was all downhill for a year and a half from there. So that was pretty disappointing. But, man, I mean, there's been a lot of big moments. Like you mentioned, the national championship game. Mike Vick was one of the most exciting electric players to watch in college football history. The 2005 ACC championship in Jacksonville was one of my very first FSU games that I ever went to as a kid. And I remember watching them against Virginia Tech in that game. So a lot of memories for me as well. Now, I want to ask you before we start talking about some big picture Virginia Tech stuff and some big picture on this game here. First, tell me a little bit of the story about Boundary Corner. How does the name come about? And just a little bit of story about what you guys are doing over there with the Boundary Corner podcast.
Yeah, so Boundary Corner really came about. Myself and Curtis Wilson, we've known each other. We go back to middle school, so we go back over 30 years at this point. We had been following the team since 1995. We, you know, chatting each other up all the time, always having conversations. And we're like, you know what, maybe we should, you know, talk about this in front of a camera, in front of a microphone, see if anybody else is a little bit interested in what we got to say. So, you know, we started this thing up in 2020, literally a month before COVID hit. So it was good and bad. We didn't have a whole lot to talk about, but at least we had a very captive audience to learn about us and get to know us and, things like that. So we had, definitely had people's attention as we were kind of working through all of that. The name comes from, Bud Foster's, defenses in the mid 2000s, really kind of made the Boundary Corner the focal point of the defense. So we just kind of adopted that, as a tribute to Bud Foster and just our love for Virginia Tech. And we've kind of been putting things together since then. We've added a couple members to our squad, Jonathan Talley, Shelton Moss, over the last couple years. And it's been a fun ride, man. It's one of those things where, you know, you don't really anticipate what it's going to be. And then it kind of grows into its own thing over time. And, you know, the community and the fan base really embraced us. And it's been an awesome ride.
That's awesome, man. I love to hear the story. And it's really a lot of the same for us, right? Like when we started this, you would have never in a million years imagined what it would grow into. And it's so much fun. And, you know, it blows my mind when we go to a game at the stadium and somebody's like, hey, that's Plant the Spear. And I'm like, someone actually cares what I talk about, right? Like, it's weird to even think, but I love to hear it, man. And I love that you have the history that you do with the program. Obviously, you know, Frank Beamer comes to mind, you know, Bud Foster, like you said, the lunch pail, that defense, that's what really comes to mind when I think of Virginia Tech. So I'm going to ask you one more question, then we're going to get into the thick of things here. As someone who has never been, but has Lane Stadium on my bucket list, just kind of give me in a nutshell, man, when it's going, it's a night game, Inter Sandman, all that stuff, man, just how electric is that atmosphere? What makes it so special? And why do fans just, they got to see it once?
It's unmatched. And I think when people talk about stadiums having a pulse, I think that's the thing that resonates the most for me, is that being in Lane Stadium and the lead up to Sandman, not even just Sandman itself, but the lead up, there's a pulse to the stadium that I haven't felt in other atmospheres. And I mean, I'm sure some of that is my sentimentality and my attachment to the program, but it feels different. And I think that's the thing that, as a Hokie fan, I think we pride ourselves on, is that it feels different when it happens in our stadium, especially when it's a night game, especially, and we haven't seen a ton of this lately, when we have a team that is intimidating, that puts on a show for four quarters after Sandman, because Sandman is great, but we want to get back to a point where people don't just show up for Sandman.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Like, and it's funny because when they reduced the capacity of Doak, the first thing I would always say is like, look, man, we're basically in lockstep capacity wise with Lane Stadium. And I'm like, and it's plenty loud. And so when people doubted whether it was going to be loud or not, we heard it for the Alabama game and stuff. And it's like, yeah, no, it's still loud. I knew it could be based on them. But you're right, man. I'm good friends with Billy Ray from Sons of Saturday. And we were talking at ACC Media Days. And he's like, yeah, the problem is the best part of the night can't be before kickoff. It has to be after kickoff. It has to be the whole package. And so that brings us to talking about the team and the whole and the situation that you're in, because you are at a transition point for the program, kind of like we're hoping to be soon. We're not there yet. You guys pulled the trigger very early, and we're over here just wondering if we even have one to pull, because we're just hanging on for dear life with Mike Norvell. But I want to ask you about that. So Brent Pry, you know, coming into this, I did say when we talked about Virginia Tech that I thought this would be a make or break year for Brent Pry with the way things have went. And it turned out to be true. So just give me some of your thoughts on why it was the right time to make that move. Obviously, the results on the field were not following. We can see that. But like, was that a good move for them? Where you're at with the coaching search? Is this the James Franklin Bowl this weekend? Because we're both two schools that have been tied to that. And then just kind of where Virginia Tech is going into this new chapter. And the thing that I'll throw on top of that is I have heard from just kind of the keeping up with Virginia Tech from a 1,000-foot perspective, there is also some additional funding that's been committed to that I think is going to make a pretty big difference. So just kind of give me your overall thoughts on this transition period for Virginia Tech and how this is going to help get them back to where Virginia Tech needs to be.
Yeah, and I'll kind of take those in reverse order. I'll start with that funding. So heading into this upcoming season, we were slated to have a budget of about $142 million for the athletic department. That's been boosted up to $200 million with the lion's share of that boost going to the football program. So that's kind of where we're at now. What that is translating to is that from a head coaching salary standpoint, you know, we're in the realm where we can offer 10 to 12 million, potentially slightly above that, you know, with some incentives, some wiggle room there for a head coach, which would put us, you know, in that, you know, top 10, top 15 in the country realm of being able to be competitive from a salary standpoint. But from there and, you know, kind of looking back at the way the Pry regime kind of backed up, you know, he fires his defensive coordinator at the end of last season. His offensive coordinator takes a demotion to coach offensive line up at Ohio State. So, you know, we end up replacing two coordinators. So at the start of the season, I'm like, okay, well, we got these two new guys coming in. What is this going to look like? Does this give Pry at least a full year before we start having some conversations, potentially more depending on, you know, what that final outcome looks like. And it was, I think right away we knew that we're still not getting things done the way we need to get done. You know, you come out, you don't look bad against South Carolina, but obviously we see that South Carolina isn't a very good football team. And then you go out and you play a decent first half against Vanderbilt, and then you get absolutely boat raced in the second half at home. At that point, the crew at Boundary Corner was ready to cut tail. We were done. We were like, let's go ahead and move on. But I think obviously for the rest of the fan base, you know, good portion of the fan base, and obviously the folks that signed the checks there in Merriman, the ODU loss at home was the nail in the coffin for that regime. Yeah. You cannot lose to a G5 in-state school in embarrassing fashion on your home turf. And this isn't the first time that Pry has lost to ODU, and it's certainly not the first time that Virginia Tech has lost to ODU. But usually that takes place down in Norfolk, which was a dumb series to do a home and home with anyway. But that's a different conversation. But yeah, you can't lose like that at home to a G5. And so that kind of, you know, that lit the fuse for the firing. I think at this point, you know, James Franklin, we've made our best and final offer for him. It's in his lap and in Jimmy Sexton's lap, whether or not they want to go ahead and sign with us before we get to a point where we need to go in a different direction, or whether they're going to play the waiting game. I think I would say that Florida State is at the top of his list because of, I know he would like to get back to the SEC or the Big Ten at some point, but I don't think taking a middle tier program where he's at now is a good move for him. I think taking a mid to upper ACC tier program right now is a good move just because of how easy it is to get in the playoffs, how easy it is to navigate the conference relative to what it looks like in the Big Ten and the SEC. So, you know, if it's not Virginia Tech, he's going to probably play the waiting game for Florida State would be my guess.
Yeah, and hopefully we have an opening soon because we're dragging our feet. But I really do think with the investment that they're making, because from my understanding, that's a big reason why Virginia Tech has been in the position that it's in. But with the new funding, and I think if you could get a splash hire like a James Franklin, I think Virginia Tech would be an easy program to put back on the map, to get back in contention. And, you know, James Franklin, I know there's the concerns with the, you know, the record versus top 10 and all that stuff. I think some of that is a little bit overblown depending on where you're at. But man, I mean, I think he's a good proven hire. And like I keep telling people, whether you like him or not, I would take 6 years of 10 win seasons. I would love that about right now because we can't
get 10 wins. We got to raise our floor first.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like let's get 6 seasons of 10 wins and maybe one or two playoffs in there. And then if we're tired of that, we'll make another move. But yeah, and I think the thing for Florida State is like if you fire Mike Norvell, you can't afford to miss on the next one because you can't afford to pay two head coach buyouts like that. So you a guy like him would be a safe kind of a safe hire with a high upside. And I could see where he would want to take a program that he could win it all because I think that's what he's out to prove now. But yeah, playing in the ACC, I think he could definitely win at either one of these programs. But man, I do think like when you talk about Florida State, I think we're probably as simple as maybe a good coaching hire away from being back to where we need to be. And I think with the investment and with a good coaching hire, I think Virginia Tech could be back in the thick of things too. But let's talk about this game, man. We do have a game on Saturday to play. I know that there's not a lot of hype around this game. There's not a lot of excitement about this game, but I'm still excited about talking about it. I'm going to be down there in Tallahassee. I'm going to be in Doak. Looking forward to this one, man. Again, these are two of my favorite brands to see play football. And I know Virginia Tech, the record stinks, right? 3-6, we know that. Florida State's 4-5. We ain't got much room to talk. But I will say, since the firing, most of the games have appeared to, at least from the box score, be competitive against some pretty good teams. I mean, you beat NC State in Carter-Finley. We got them coming up next week. I'm pretty much counting that as a loss because we haven't won a road game in 2 years. But where, I guess what I'm asking, because we're kind of going through this too right now, like how much longer are we going to see this team keep playing hard? I mean, there's only a couple games left, but last year in 2024, when we went 2-10, there was a lot of quit on that team. Yeah. We haven't seen that from Florida State this year, but we've had a couple games where we've just been flat. So my question is, knowing what we're going through, kind of in the same struggle here, where is Tech at mentally as a team? Are they still playing hard? Have you seen any quit? Because right now the box scores don't really seem to indicate that they have quit.
The only game I saw quit in them was that ODU game. I think the second half, they were done. And I think that's another big reason why we saw the shift away from Brent Pry after that one, because I think it would have been very hard to get the locker room back after that one if you stuck with that guy. That being said, a lot of fight from these guys the last few weeks here. Frustrating games, I think, from a fan perspective, because you see what this team could have been if, you know, maybe you didn't have as many opt-outs after, you know, Brent got fired. You know, maybe, you know, a couple other things go your way. You probably a little bit better roster-wise going against, mm-hmm. like, a Louisville where you kind of play well for a half and then, you know, have some miscues and things like that, and it kind of gets away from you at the end. Similar with Wake Forest, right? So those are probably two that, you know, if we're looking at it again, we'd like to have some of that back. But, I mean, really Virginia Tech, at least offensively, is going to go the way that Kyren Drone's play goes. And it's really, we've had some games where it looks like the offensive game plan was to throw the ball around a little bit more. And I'm like, you know, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
We got to lean on our running game. Our running game is our absolute strength. Whether it's Kyren toting the rock, whether it's someone like Marcellus Hawkins, whether it's a Tarion Stewart, those three guys carrying the football, if we can get those carries somewhere around 35 or 40 total, I feel pretty good about where we are. We're at least going to be in the thick of things in the matchup. Now, if you know, you see all those carries, nobody's getting anywhere close to 20 carries in that situation, I'm going to feel a lot worse, because that means Kyren's throwing the ball And that's not to say that he can't make plays with his arm, but he plays with a different level of confidence when he's running the football, when we're making plays in the running game, and he can use that play action and different motions within the offense to scheme guys open where we can hit some big plays.
It's actually kind of funny that you say that, because we're in the same boat with Tommy Castellanos. Like, the wildest stat is the more he throws it, the worse we are. Like, he, every time he throws the ball over 20 yard or over 20 attempts in a game, we've lost. Every time he's thrown it under 20 attempts, we've won. So, like, the recipe is just stop throwing it around 20 and we might be pretty good. So yeah, it is funny that we're in that position.
The thing that I've seen, it's like Florida State, Virginia Tech, and Georgia Tech are kind of the same offense, but Georgia Tech knows what they are, and Virginia Tech and Florida State haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, we threw it, I think, 42 or 43 times against Clemson last week. Like, you should have ran it 42 or 43 times, because this just isn't the success, the recipe for success. So, yeah, let me ask you a couple real quick about the offense, just to follow up. So, obviously, it sounds like the run game is kind of the strength there. I know Kyron Drones, being dual threat, is a guy that he's got almost 500 yards rushing this season, but he's been sacked 20 times, it looks like, this so far this year. I saw the offensive line was ranked pretty low, 128th in pass block efficiency. Can you just tell me how's that offensive line look up front? Because, newsflash, our defensive line is not super great. So you might not have a whole lot of trouble there, but maybe what is the overall strength and weakness? Am I hearing it correct that the pass offense is kind of the weakness here and the rush offense is kind of the strength when it comes to Virginia Tech?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, looking at the offensive line, it really runs true. Very good in the run blocking for the most part. Suspect in pass pro. Some of that has been because some of the key guys that we thought were going to be on the field have been injured, had one opt out. So we've kind of been dealing with some of the shifting parts there that has been a little frustrating to kind of watch go down. But for the most part, I mean, the offensive weapons have been intact. You know, it's really just been inconsistency at the quarterback position, inconsistency with some of our playmakers, and inconsistency in pass pro. And that's really been, you know, the biggest bugaboo, along with inconsistency in play calling and not kind of leaning on the things that you do well often enough, early enough, where you don't get into a position where you have to go to the air.
Man, so
that's really been the big thing.
Sounds like we got a lot of the same problems going. Sounds like we got a lot of the same problems going on. So last thing on the offense here, give me a player. Like, we all know about Kyron Drones, and I have heard a lot of the things about, you know, it's just really been inconsistency has been his biggest thing throughout his career. And I know last year you guys had an amazing running back, Bashaw Tooten. So if I'm a Florida State fan and I'm turning this game on Saturday night, on the offense, who should I know about? Who is going to be a problem for the Florida State defense if you had to single somebody out?
I'd say Marcellus Hawkins probably has the biggest kind of big game threat. Tarion Stewart is very much, he's a bowling ball. He's a bully. I mean, his nickname is Bully. He's a guy that's going to get some hard yards, but he's not going to be the home run threat. He's not going to be the guy that's going to wear you out over the course of a game. Hawkins is a kind of a do-it-all back, catches the ball pretty well out of the backfield when he's targeted. Can run inside and outside, has the ability to kind of hit that next gear, make a big play down the field. So he's definitely the one from a running back standpoint to watch out for. It's really hard to pick a wide receiver. I'd say Aiden Green, but when you look at our passing from last week, I don't know if you looked at the stat line, but our week before last, one catch, 17 yards. That was our leading receiver. So it's hard to say what that's going to look like. But Aiden Green probably has the biggest upside from a wide receiver perspective.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I looked back and I saw it was like 76 passing yards or something. And I was like, okay, then. All right. Well, hopefully, you know, I guess they're relying on the ground game. But let's flip over to the defense. Defense, like I said before, man, is usually what I think of when I hear the name Virginia Tech. The Bud Foster, the lunch pail days, man, that's what I think of. I know you guys lost a ton of talent. That was one of the things that I questioned with Tech coming into this year, was they had a lot of talented guys lead the defense last year and, you know, trying to bounce back and have a good year this year. Right now, it looks like 102nd in scoring defense, 29.7 points per game allowed. But it's pretty balanced, right? 71st in pass defense, 73rd in rush defense. So there appears to be some struggles in the red zone, a little bit with giving up the explosive plays and creating turnovers. Those were the areas that really stuck out to me when I was looking through the stats. I'm a big numbers guy, as most of our listeners know. But same as the offense, just give me a general overview of what we can expect from this defense, strength, weaknesses, and maybe a guy we need to watch.
Yeah, so when you look at the strengths, I think we do a decent job of intermittently get after the passer. I think that's generated by our defensive coordinator and some of the pressures that he'll dial up. When we're able to kind of set the tone with our pass rush, we look a whole lot better on defense. The things that we struggled with the most, big plays in the running game and getting off the field on third down and in the red zone, by stopping the pass. We haven't done either of those things very well. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we had a lot of opt-outs on defense when the coaching change was made. You got a defensive-minded coach. These guys already stuck around through a defensive coordinator change, a lot of them, in the offseason, and now all of a sudden their head coach is gone as well. So a lot of opt-outs on that side of the ball. You got two of your best cover guys that opted out, hit the transfer portal. Two defensive linemen and defensive ends in this case, edge guys that were in the portal, and then a couple linebackers as well. So we had guys at every level of the defense that hit the portal or opted out for the season once the coaching change was made. And you can see it in depth. I mean, the biggest strength of this defense is going to be that defensive tackle area. And that's an area that didn't have any opt-outs. These are guys that are carrying the lunch pail. These are guys that are out there making the most plays consistently on that defense, along with our junior linebacker, Caleb Woodson, who is probably the best overall talent on that defense.
Man, I guess, I really didn't think about that because you made the change three games in. So I guess they could all save that season of eligibility. Yeah. So they all, we had talked about if we were going to fire Mike, it was at least late enough in the season that these guys, they've already played in four games. They probably should just ride the season out, cash your NIL check and try and find a landing spot somewhere else. And that hurts, right? When you not only you have to kind of start over at a coaching position, but you're also losing a lot of the key pieces on your team. That really does make it tough. And so, that's something that maybe I hadn't even really thought of accounting for. But man, let's go ahead and kind of bring this one home. So it sounds like, I really do think when the way some of these teams match up, like I will, I'll say it to be honest, I'm leaning Florida State in this one, in this game. 90% of that is because we're at home, right? We're 4-2 at home. We've played better at home. The losses were against a pretty decent Pitt team and a okay Miami team. Like, I'm never going to say they're good because, it's Miami. So, how that is. I'm sure you guys love seeing Virginia.
I absolutely know what it's like with Miami.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I know you guys don't like Miami. I know you were probably happy to see UVA lose last weekend too. I'm sure that was a sweet one for you guys, man. I know that's going to be a huge game coming up. Like, I was there for that. I got to see the freaking double overtime in the field storming and all. Gosh, dang.
We still have a chance to ruin their season, I think, a little bit here. So we'll see what they do down the stretch here.
It would be awesome. And, I always say, when I'm bad, I just want chaos. So, let's just have everybody take a loss.
After this week, we got Miami and UVA back-to-back. We going to play spoiler to one of those two, I guarantee it.
Listen, I will be a Florida State fan on Saturday, and then at Sunday at midnight, I will be a massive Hokie fan for the next 2 weeks because, first off, Miami, always want to see them guys take a loss. And then Virginia, that payback for a little bit of what they did for us. But let's bring this one home with how you see this game going, right? I said if we played this game in Blacksburg, because we haven't won a road game since 2023, so it would be hard to pick us on the road. I think if we played on the road, I would lean Virginia Tech in this game. Because we're at home, we're 4-2. We beat Alabama at home. I still don't know how that happened. We just hammered Wake at home 42-7 and then backed it up with a terrible performance at Clemson. I don't know which Florida State team's going to show up, but because we're at home, and because I think some of the ways we match up, like we're really good on third down, you guys have struggled on third down, and some things like that when you get into the numbers, I'm going to pick Florida State in this one, but I did have Florida State winning, but Virginia Tech covering, because I think 13.5 is a little bit generous for how bad we have been and how close Virginia Tech has played in basically every game that they've been in, right? There hasn't really been any crazy blowouts in there. So I have Florida State winning this one 31-21, but I'm interested to see how to hear your thoughts on how you see this game going and what maybe if you have a score prediction you want to tack on at the end. And I usually will ask a very open-ended question to our guests and just say, you know, why you're giving your thoughts. Virginia Tech wins if, and I'll throw it to you.
Virginia Tech wins if the history we have against Tommy Castellanos continues to play out. We are 2-0 when he started. I think we intercepted him 5 times in those 2 games. So we have that's a pretty rough. Good history. Granted, that's with another team.
Yeah.
But we have a pretty good history playing Tommy Castellanos, even through a run where Virginia Tech has not been that great and has not been super great at turning the football over for the other offense. So Virginia Tech could win if we continue that trend. I don't see it happening. I think I'm kind of right there with you. I'm thinking like a 32-24 would be my final for this one. I just feel like Florida State is going to have too many opportunities on offense, even if we do turn Tommy over once or twice. I just think we're not going to be able to do as much offensively or enough offensively where we're not going to give Florida State a ton of opportunities to score some points.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I will say for us, like, when you look at our numbers and you look at our record, they don't match up. And the reason a lot of that is mistakes, turnovers, costly penalties, things like that, just repeatedly. We will give you a chance to win a game. That is for sure. But, man, I appreciate you coming on. We're going to see. I hope it's a good one, right? Like, obviously, we both need a win in the worst kind of way. We're both kind of battling to make a bowl towards the end of the season. But, man, I just hope it's a good game at night in Doak. I'm looking forward to it. Before we get out of here, man, again, I really appreciate it. I'm grateful for your time. Tell everybody, if they're watching this, where they can find Boundary Corner and how best to keep up with you guys.
Yeah, so all of our episodes, everything on YouTube, et cetera, they can be found at BoundaryCornerVT.com. But if you want to follow along with us on X, we are at Boundary Corner, and on Instagram, at BoundaryCornerVT. So go check us out.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. I'm going to be going on you guys' show tonight here in just a little bit, so make sure you'll probably be watching this after the fact. Make sure you go back and you check that one out. Also, I want to give a shout-out to the College Huddle, which is what linked us together to make this possible. So with that being said, guys, Brian, I really appreciate your time. I thank you for coming on. And, guys, we will see you on the next one. As always, go Noles.